I'm Master at Life and Weight Loss Coach, Jillian Lama, and you're listening to the Body You Crave podcast, where you'll learn how to end emotional eating, lose excess weight, and feel amazing in your body. No cheating required. Keep listening, and I'll show you how. Hey, hey, welcome back. All right, so the little man and I just got back a couple days ago from spending about a week in DC, and we had a great time visiting family and doing some sightseeing and doing an early Christmas, unwrapping presents, doing some shopping, some gingerbread making and housemaking and decorating. And yeah, we just had a really wonderful time. And now that it's December and we are full swing into all of it, the tree is up and decorated, mostly decorated. And I am still pulling out decorations for around the house. And this is part of why I feel like I need to start decorating for Christmas in November, like at the beginning of November, because it takes a bit of time to actually get everything out and then to be able to enjoy it. Anyways, I don't know. Thoughts for next year. But today I want to dive into this concept about being binge-free for 5 years. And I don't know when this crossed my mind, but at some point, I think over the summer, I realized I haven't binged since 2019. I can't even remember the last binge because it's been so long and it's not a part of my regular happenings anymore. There have been some days when I've overeaten, and now I would say my overeats look like a couple of bites that are too much. And this might happen once a month, maybe every other month. Like, it happens occasionally because that's part of normal eating. Sometimes we overeat a little bit. But it's how we handle the overeat that has so radically changed. And now it's not happening every single day. I'm not binging every single day. And so I was a binge eater, really, I would say disordered eating habits. I had a really toxic, dysfunctional relationship with food and body. And it's really fascinating. The more research and work I've done to help clients by understanding abuse cycles and abuse patterns and toxic relationships between individuals, the more I start to see how I had this really highly toxic, dysfunctional relationship with food. And I was like, huh, this is wild. And I'll explain what this looks like, because I would hold on to these food rules and this belief about I just need to exercise more and eat less. And sometimes it worked. And sometimes I did lose weight. And sometimes it seemed this is what I'm supposed to do. It's the love bombing phase. And then something would happen and it would go wrong. And so then when you have this, to me, I think of it as like an ego injury, a narcissistic injury. There's something where there's a trigger, and then there is this kind of abusive behavior that comes out because of it. So that's what we see in relationships. And for me with food, it was, okay, I'd be losing or I have lost the weight and I feel pretty good, but something happens usually internally or just with my habits or behaviors to where then I gain the weight back. And I'm like, oh no, I need to get myself back to where I was before, which is a common theme for what I've heard from a lot of people, not just the clients that I've worked with, but in talking with just dozens and dozens of people and having these conversations around the relationship and what the goal was. It was like this negative interaction would happen and it would always be, how do we get back to where things were before? How do we get back to when things were good? How do we get back to the beginning or back to this stage of the relationship? And that's exactly what it was for me with food and weight loss. It was like, oh, how do I get back to when this worked, when I was losing the weight? And so then it became, now I need to do it harder. Now I need to cut more. Now I need to run more. Now I need to eat less. Now I need to restrict harder. Now I need to work out harder. I need to work out longer. And so it was this constant struggle, because sometimes there was a reward. Sometimes I would lose weight. And sometimes I was actually keeping it off for about a year. And I was terrified of gaining it back, though. It was not a peaceful, calm year. I still lived in diet hell. I still was over-exercising and so over-reliant on exercise, but it kept me in this loop because sometimes it worked. Sometimes things were good. And that is a key thing that I hear in relationships, is it's not always bad. Sometimes things are pretty good. We do have some good moments. We do have some good times, but you're stuck in this loop and this constant cycle. And I just had this epiphany moment where I'm like, holy crap, this is now like how I see my relationship with food and why it was so hard to break this pattern. And I have an episode, I'd have to go back and check to see what number it was, but I have an episode about diet trauma, because we do store a lot of emotional, psychological, and physical trauma in our body based off of the diets that we've done, because of the food that we've restricted, because of what we were required to do, required to give up, what life looked like. We also store a lot of trauma around having lost weight and then gaining it back, and all of the shame and regret and self-loathing that typically comes along with it. And so what I've noticed here with this, though, is there's so many similarities in how we're treating food and this type of like dynamic, and how we can be in these types of relationships. And one doesn't necessarily mean the other. If you're an emotional eater or binge eater, it doesn't mean you're in a bad or toxic relationship. Like, definitely not. But it has been interesting to see these types of patterns and the correlations and the similarities of people who are in emotionally abusive relationships often can be turning to food or sometimes alcohol as a coping mechanism, as a way to escape the emotional pain and frustration that they're in. And they are emotionally eating because it's a quick, easy way to feel, to quote, feel better. So I don't want to bore you too much with my ridiculous eating habits and things that happened in the past. But I do think it is worth noting and sharing some of the behaviors and the patterns and the habits that I had, because one, I don't want you to feel bad, guilty, shameful, because you might have a similar habit or might be doing the same thing. And two, like, we need to be able to talk about this, and we need to be able to recognize what these patterns are, where they start, where they come from, what is really driving this. Because for a long time, I didn't realize I was emotionally eating. I didn't realize I was binge eating. And the binge for me, a lot of my binges came from my body's physiological response to undereating, because I was trying to overexercise and undereat. And that is what drove the bulk of my binge eating from, I would say, about 2004 until probably close to 2016. I would say that, like, that 8-year span, I would say the bulk of my binge eating was very much my body responding and trying to find balance, trying to find equilibrium, trying to get in enough food and enough nutrients. And then the last 4 years, 2016 to 2020, is when I really was working on this habit. So for those 4 years, then it was, I would say, there were a lot more emotional drivers. But there were also still the same cravings and physiological response, because during that time, I was still over-exercising and trying to undereat. So I just want to shed some light. And ever since, so let's see, so since the year 2000, I have not lived anywhere longer than 2 years. That has been the max. I have moved every 1 to 2 years of my life for the last 25 years. And I have actually now lived in Alabama the longest I've ever lived in a place in the last 25 years, because I've now been here like 2 years and 2 weeks. November 22nd was my 2-year anniversary. And there, I always had thoughts or intentions of staying longer, but it was so funny just how it never seemed to work out. I would get close to the date. Sometimes I was like 1 or 2 days off from hitting 2 years and I would move. Sometimes it was like a week prior and we'd be moving. Sometimes the moves were on my own. Sometimes they were with my ex-husband. Sometimes they were with my parents and my family of origin. I can see so many different habits and patterns based off of where I was living, like what was happening in my life, where, like, being in college, out of college, what state or country I was in. I see various different habits coming out. So I don't want to bore you too much. I think this might end up being a before episode where we just talk very much about what did life look like before, because that diet hell that I lived in was so hard. It was such a struggle, and it was this internal struggle, this internal war with food and my body that I tried really hard to hide from other people. And other people would notice things like, oh, she's eating some funny stuff, or okay, that doesn't seem normal. But there, I hid it pretty well from the bulk of the world. Like my best friend saw it. I'm sure at times my ex-husband saw it, but I still hid a lot of things from him, or at least I tried to. And a lot of people saw my quote, dedication to exercise, and they were impressed. They were like, wow, you are so dedicated. No, this was not about dedication. This was highly dysfunction. This was high dysfunction. This was very toxic. This was not healthy. This was not a good thing. So this was, but I want to explain and share what this looked like at different times because it wasn't all the time. I wasn't binging every single day for 12 years. It was, there were ups and downs. There were phases. It looked different as things went along, but food and exercise was really such a primary focus of my entire life. And I still like to move my body and exercise every day. Like my body just feels better when I get in some kind of movement. And so a lot of times I'm walking. There was a couple of days ago, like I got in like a 2.5 mile walk. I can't remember if we were going to, it might have been we were going to see a movie, but I didn't get in as long of a walk as I typically do. And I was like, that's okay. And then that afternoon, I could have gone for a walk again and chose to take a nap. Like I'm not as obsessed with exercise, but I do feel better when I move my body and doing it in certain ways. And I also have learned lifting weights and doing body pump 2 to 3 days a week feels really good for my body. If I do it more than that's when I typically, sometimes I'll get injured, but usually I don't feel as good. Like it's too much. So anyways, let's back up and start from the beginning. Okay. There were definitely ups and downs. Sometimes I was an overeater at lunch. Sometimes I was a snacker at dinner. Sometimes I was more of the overeater at dinner. Sometimes I was trying to decompress at the end of the night, and that's when I would be overeating or binging. But I could see, like I see some binge behavior specifically when I was 18 and a senior in high school. And this was in a high season of overexercising and undereating. And my parents had done a keto diet the summer before. I had lost some weight there. And so it was more of, I need to be able to maintain this. I need this flat stomach and thighs that don't touch. And I need to look a certain way. And I have to be thin enough. And I should look this way. And so as I went, like I ran cross country and that went like pretty smooth. And then I started to play soccer and there was like less running than cross country. But even with cross country practice, sometimes we would run like maybe a mile or 2 miles or 2 to 3, but it wasn't enough. And I would go out and I would run extra after practice. Like I would run more. Some of the guys joked that I was woodshedding is what they called it, where it was like I was putting in extra practice and extra running. But I don't think I needed to from a competitive standpoint. I did it because I was thinking, I have to keep this weight off. I have to look a certain way. Even though losing the weight over the summer was, it had way more to do with the food than with running. I didn't run hardly at all. I was walking with my mom, but it was mostly the food habits that changed. But I was in this season of overexercising. So cross country, playing soccer, after soccer practice, often a lot of days I would go run extra track. We had the 1 mile and 2 mile race. So I switched from doing short distances to longer distances. But even with practice, that wasn't enough running. I didn't get in enough miles or enough time. So I would often go out and run extra. But my body was so hungry. Like I remember at one point in particular, soccer practice, didn't get in enough running. So I think was like a Friday night. I went out and I ran 8 or 10 miles. I think I did a 10 mile run that Friday night. And it felt pretty easy. It felt doable. I just did a couple loops around my little town and I got back and my sister had some friends over and I remember sitting at the kitchen table with them and I went into the freezer and instead of eating like a real meal, instead of eating food and fueling my body properly, I proceeded to eat ice cream out of the carton with a spoon. And I told this story on another episode a couple months ago, but there was a point when my spoon, like I'd eaten so much and I had these thoughts of one more bite. This tastes so good. Just one more bite. And then my spoon hit the bottom of the carton. And I was like, oh my gosh, what have I just done? I have now ruined my 10 mile run. What just happened? But my body needed energy. It needed a fuel source. And so anytime that we are over exercising and we're under eating, especially then, not only was I undereating on food in general, but I was undereating carbs as well. So I would try to do all this exercise and then low carb, eat a salad with grilled chicken at lunch. And there was a time when like that was satisfying and it was enough, but there was a time when it wasn't. Then it was like, no, I'm still like ravenously hungry. And it was really hard. So then I would eat like an apple and beef jerky, but I was so hungry and I like couldn't feel satisfied because after a couple months of this, my body was just, what the hell? What are we doing? And so, but I really struggled with eating like real food and healthy food, but I was constantly gravitating towards the snacks, the ice cream, the sweets. And I think with the ice cream in this particular example, it was like, I just wanted something sweet because my body wants quick energy or high energy. And so growing up as a kid, I never really liked peanut butter that much. And I remember watching my mom eat it out of the jar with a spoon sometimes. I remember thinking like, ew, that's gross. Like it just like the texture and it's so thick. And for me, I was very particular about my PB&Js. It could not be in a tortilla. It had to be on bread. You needed the right ratio of peanut butter to jelly. You needed at least a little bit more jelly than peanut butter. Like I really wasn't a huge peanut butter fan. And I noticed because it's high in fat and calories, I would crave it. So this was more after college when I noticed it of like eating peanut butter out of the jar with a spoon because it's high energy, right? Just like sugar, sweets, snack foods is quick energy. That's what my body was craving. This was the physiological response to the undereating and overexercising is why I was going for the peanut butter. It wasn't that I was emotionally eating. It was a physiological response based on what my body was doing and what I was doing to my body, trying to get it to conform to what I wanted it to look like. So this was typically the pattern. And this is what I really noticed as I look back. I see it a lot senior year, just really trying to outrun my nutrition. And because I was trying to, or really it was like trying to outrun my low self-esteem, thinking that I needed to lose weight, and then I would have these sugar cravings. And so around Christmas time that year, I remember my girlfriends from the soccer team, we all got together. One of our friends taught us all how to knit, and we were knitting like scarves, and I think some were doing beanies and stuff like that. And so I remember we had this like knitting party one night, and I ate 10 or 12 cookies hanging out with the girls from soccer. And it wasn't that I could just have two. It was I needed a lot. And it wasn't emotional. It was very much my body was craving sugar and carbs and some kind of energy source because I was depriving and restricting it. Towards the end of that year, after the track season had ended, I took a couple days off from running, I remember. But I still, like in that spring season, I was gaining weight. So I was trying to run more. I was trying to eat less because I noticed I was gaining weight. But I kept fighting my body, and I would end up eating like a half a sheet pan of 7-layer bars or half a tube of raw cookie dough that we took to the movies one day. Or there were just these intense cravings for sweets. And it was hard not to binge and overeat on it. And it was like a little bit wasn't enough to be satisfied. And the kind of irony of it all was like, but I also wouldn't just make myself a sandwich. And I was terrified of bread, terrified of rice or potatoes or like carbs, but yet eating sugar and eating sweets. And I think in my mind, I justified it as, well, I really enjoy sweets, so I would rather eat sweets than bread. I would rather have dessert than bread. And I think it's one thing to decide if you go out to a restaurant and let's say you go out to a Mexican restaurant and you're like, I'd rather have a margarita than the chips. Or I would rather, if you go out to an Italian place and they serve bread, or even like the Cheesecake Factory does it, and you're like, oh, I would rather have dessert than have the free bread at the beginning of the meal. That's one thing. But to say, okay, I'm not going to eat carbs at all, I'm just going to eat the sugar though, that's like, you're not giving your body the nutrients it needs. And that was the biggest thing for me was throughout this was really because of the thoughts from like the 90s and fat is bad and calories are bad and you want to go low calorie. And then early 2000s was low carb. So now you want to go low carb. In my brain, it was this Frankenstein diet of like low carb, low calorie, and low fat. And there were times when it, quote, worked. There were times over these 12 years when I lost weight. There were times over these 12 years where I kept it off for maybe 6 months or a year or close to it. But I lived in this diet hell and this constant restriction and constantly overeating on the sweets, binging on the sweets, over-exercising, under-eating like real healthy food. And it was just a miserable place to live. But I didn't know any other way. And this is where I have to have a lot of compassion for myself too and past me. And I look back on like high school me, senior me, and she really wanted to fit in. This was her fifth high school and she wanted to be liked and she wanted to be popular and she wanted to have a normal high school experience. And she wanted to play out the movies that she saw and TV shows and things like that to some extent. And there was a lot of really trying to control my body and what it looked like as a way to be good enough, as a way to feel like now I am pretty, now I am worthy, now I am now somehow, quote, enough, and somehow I am better because I weigh less or because my body looks like this. But there's a lot of insecurity kind of running under this time, like under these 12 years. So during this time, so at the end of the track season, when I had stopped running for a couple days, I was eating, snacking, not making good food choices. But then I felt like I gained weight. I don't know that I actually did, but I felt a little pudgy. And it was probably more water weight, salt intake, stuff like that. But my thought from that day forward for a long time was, I can't take a break from running. If I stop running, even for a day or two, I'm going to gain weight. And that was the underlying driving force of the next like decade plus of this constant over-exercising. And sometimes it was exercising as kind of punishment. It was exercising to make up for what I ate the night before. But a lot of times it was this forced exercise because I needed to lose weight or because I needed to maintain the weight. But I could never stop running. I could never take a day off. I could never have an off day. And it was just so hard to find this balance. And even when I would get injured, I would maybe stop running, but then I would be walking on a high incline or I'd be doing the stair climber until I got injured from that. And I would have to figure out, okay, now what can I do to burn enough calories to overexercise and try to undereat to make up for all of the overeating and the binging because I'm not fueling my body throughout the day. And it was just this hot mess that continued and cycled over and over again. That was the main driver from 2004 to 2016. And then the emotional eating side of things started around 2016. But it was like on top of the physical response that my body was having to trying to starve it, basically. So I noticed I was like snacking throughout the afternoon at work. I'd be overeating or snacking after work. A lot of times I would skip dinner and I would just like snack. So I'm going to give you a few examples of some different times of what this looked like. And it's interesting because this is where I started writing out, okay, where was I living? What did it look like then? Because there was always something at play here. So let's start with college, because I went into college having gained weight the end of my senior year and trying to run over the summer to like outrun like extra running to lose weight, but it was also at a slower pace. It was more like half marathon types of distances. It was like 10, 12 miles, almost a day. Like I was trying to run really long distances. I would stop and walk or stop and stretch. But I was also running cross country for the University of the Pacific, my freshman year of college. And I did not set myself up very well to be like a competitive cross country runner where your race is 3 miles. And the goal is to be fast. Not this like slow, long distance running. But that's like all that I could do, especially when I was trying to run every single day and still trying to undereat throughout the summer. So I ran cross country. I was still like, so I'm deathly afraid of carbs, right? Like this whole time, this whole 12-year period, I'm like so afraid of carbs. So I'm not eating pasta, rice, potatoes, bread. But then I would go home and I would eat 3 or 4 granola bars at night, or I might eat a chocolate brownie and I would try to just eat half, but then I would usually eat the whole thing. And these were like large brownies, like the size of your face. It was a lot. I would eat 2 servings of scrambled eggs in the morning. I remember There was one of the ladies there who would serve the food. She called me two scoops because for a year I would come in and get two scoops of eggs. And like eggs were a great breakfast for me, but I would just eat scrambled eggs because I was trying to low carb after running several miles in the morning. Because this wasn't just my freshman year, it was often sophomore into junior. And I felt hungry a lot throughout the day between meals. And looking back, like again, it was like I wasn't eating nutrient dense meals. I didn't have the full balance to feel satiated. I wasn't fueling my body properly. And even though I was drinking a lot of water, I think there were these low levels of feeling hungry that I was very quick to eat over when maybe I just needed some more water, when really I just needed to move my body, when really I probably was procrastinating, when there may have been some emotional things coming up. And then I was like, oh, okay, I can grab a snack. And there may have been like light levels of hunger that I was now eating over. And then when I studied abroad in Moscow, Russia, there were some people from the embassy who were training for a marathon. This was the beginning of 2007. And I was like, sweet. Like I had no desire to run a marathon, but with that much running, I was bound to lose weight. That was my thought. That is why I signed up. Nope. Did not lose weight. Maybe lost a pound-ish. You're like, but I was still overweight. I still felt overweight. I still felt uncomfortable in my body. And the kind of irony here is, okay, I'm proving to myself that running more does not help me lose weight. However, I couldn't let go of the running habit. For years, I couldn't let go. It wasn't until I got injured, like years later, that I finally stopped running. And so it's wild, but it was like I was trying to undereat, low carb, run really long distances, do these hard workouts, not take a day off. And then I would end up overeating at dinner. I would eat like Cool Whip for dessert because I think sometimes we had ice cream, but again, like ice cream was bad because it was the full fat, full sugar kind, but I could do Cool Whip. So then I would eat like frozen Cool Whip as a dessert, but I'd eat like the whole container of it. I remember the guy that I was dating at the time ordered like a case of it because I would eat so much of it. Not healthy. And I think had I been eating and I had tried eating like six times a day and eating smaller portions, but overall, I kept trying to starve my body. I kept trying to overexercise and not eat enough. And then this like small snack wasn't good enough. And so I ended up eating like meals six times a day. And so I just kept consuming more, but also not enough to really feed my body what it needed. So there's like real hunger that we're trying to feed. There's also this core hunger. There's this core craving that runs underneath all of it. And a lot of it is a core wound. It's I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not thin enough. I'm not pretty enough. I need to look a certain way. And there's so much that we try to control our body shape, size, weight in order to get it to look a certain way so that way we can feel a certain way, so that we have certain thoughts about ourselves. That's really all that was happening. But that was the only way I knew how to do. That's what everybody said. Just eat less and exercise more. And I did, and it didn't work. And then I told myself, I just need to do it harder. I just need to do it more. Rather than saying, okay, this isn't working. I need to find a new or different way. There, like I just was like, nope, I have to cut even more. I have to run even longer. I have to exercise even harder. So it showed up in college. And then in college, I was also, quote, rewarded because after running the marathon, so I went back to college for my senior year and I decided to run a half marathon in Monterey. And I was like, okay, so I'm going to do my training and I'm just going to focus on my training and I'm going to like not look at the scale. And I did this weightlifting class and I ended up losing weight and I dropped easily 15 pounds. But I was like, I didn't know how. All I knew was I'm trying to exercise more and maybe eat a little less. And I was still trying to low carb. And I was still eating frozen yogurt every single night, but then I lost the weight. But then it was like, now how do I maintain it? How do I keep it off? But here's the reward system, right? Here's I can't think of the word right now, of like the intermittent reward or like the intermittent praise that you get where it's like, we're back to this love bombing where things are good. Things are working. See, I'm getting what I want and I get to feel good about myself. but I also have to hang on for dear life. And at some point, inevitably, the weight's going to come back. I didn't want that to happen. And so after college, I ended up losing a little bit more weight because I was always in this constant state of trying to lose another 5 pounds, trying to lose a couple more pounds, even though I looked great. Like, I had a friend comment on a post I made several months ago, and she was like, I thought you looked amazing. And even though I did look good, but I could never really enjoy it. I never felt calm and comfortable in my body. And so it was just this constant striving, constant seeking. And so after college, I lost a little more weight, but then gained weight back, then moved to Bangladesh, running every day, even on vacation. I had low energy, trying to low carb, deathly afraid to eat like real carbs, but I would eat like can of nuts at night, maybe not a whole can, but like half a can. They would eat a lot where it's a lot of fat, a lot of calories, really dense. I'd feel so heavy. Then I wouldn't want to go work out the next morning. So then I would drink maybe a little bit of coffee. I would do some work and then I would try to not eat until my workout, which might not be until like 2 o'clock. That's what kind of got me into this kind of binging habit too, again, because I'm not feeding my body properly. There are lots of little bits and pieces in here. Some of them I'm leaving out. Anyways, I met my ex-husband while overseas. We came back it was like a year or two later. We got married and then we're able to live together. So 2014 now. This is now 10 years. Oh my gosh. It was 2014. So it's 10 years after this all started. I had now done a decade of this and I still kept trying to do it. So we were stationed at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. And again, just a lot of really disordered eating habits, trying to run 5-6 miles a day, maybe lifting once a week, maybe twice a week, but I didn't have classes that I could rely on. I had started to get into body pump prior, but like just barely. And so I was going to low carb, run a lot, like really rely on cardio. And I had a lot of cravings for sweets that I would often give into, especially at night. But I was so extreme that I would pick the rice off of my sushi. And I was never a sushi fan, partly because of the rice, partly because really thick cuts of raw fish, I'm not a fan of. There's a texture thing there that I didn't like, but I started to warm up to some different types. I was like, oh, I started with a California roll and I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. And then my ex got a rainbow roll at one point and I was like, oh, that's actually very good. I was like, I could do this. And there were still some that I didn't totally love, some pieces I didn't totally love, but for the most part, I got into it. But I was like picking the rice off of my sushi. And sometimes I'd be like, they just put too much on there. And sometimes that was true. Sometimes some places would put on way more rice than fish, and it just wasn't the right ratio. Like you're basically just eating a lot of rice. But for the most part, most places, it was pretty evenly proportioned. And I was just so afraid of the rice. But then I would sneak ice cream in the dark when no one was looking once we got back home. Like once my ex went to bed, I would be like sneaking food and protein bars and chocolate because I had cravings. I had these physiological desires and need for food. And then when my ex would go out of town and he would do a training or he would be gone in the field for a bit of time, I felt relieved and relaxed because then I had a thought, oh, okay, finally I can just eat whatever I want, however much I want, without being judged, without fear of being judged, because he would make comments like, you sure you want to eat that? Or aren't you trying to lose weight? And I was, but it just felt so shamey. And I couldn't handle his potential shame or the shame that I thought he was giving me, because really it was coming from inside of me, because I couldn't handle my own personal shame that I felt towards myself. So any of his comments, even though he may not have meant anything negative by it, I still took it that way because that was my underlying belief. That's what I already believed. And this is when I was also like, I was trying to like sneak food, eat it secretly. I would hide wrappers or empty containers, bury it in the trash can because I needed to dispose of the evidence. Nobody could see. I am trying to lose weight. I am trying to eat healthier. So nobody could see that I was doing this bad thing, that I was eating these bad foods. And this is one of the biggest things is it's not just shame when we gain weight. There were times when I maintained my weight, but I was still overeating and binging basically every day. But there's a lot of shame around what we're eating and how much we're eating. And this is one of the challenges that I see with like binge eating and how do we heal it? How do we solve it? Because it can feel, we just have so much internal criticism for ourselves and we don't want to talk about it with anybody. We don't want to let on. We don't want to show anybody. So much is done in private. It's done in secret. I've talked with many people. I would say I've worked with mostly women, but men can have these habits too. And for the women though, like they would talk about going through the drive-thru on their way home from work and stopping and getting food and then throwing away the wrappers at the park. It's like you have to get rid of the evidence before you get home, or getting like a box of popsicles or a box of chocolate bars, or like you would get a box, you'd throw away the box so nobody could see how many bars were in there total. So that way, if there were 12, but you ate 4 or 5 in the car, you could come home, you could leave one in the car, but come home with 6, but nobody knew that you started with 12. So it was like, now nobody knows. It's all this like secrecy. And that is when like the secret eating like really picked up. And I would say before that, there was probably some secret eating because there was shame. But that was when I really started to notice it. And it came out later when I had roommates or housemates. But yeah, but there was this sense of like when he was gone, when he was out of town, I could just eat what I wanted. And I also had I had low energy. I would get up and run like 5 miles, but I'm not eating properly. And so I would force myself to exercise, but then I wouldn't want to do anything the rest of the day. I was so tired. And I was so obsessive and so adamant about having to exercise, needing it to look a certain way, needing to burn so many calories. And it was just like this compulsive need, especially with running. Like running seemed to be the thing of this is what I have to do to lose the weight or to maintain my weight loss. And I have to. It was like this pressure, and really it was driven from fear. Even when I would say no to desserts and people might say, oh, wow, look, she's got self-control because I'm in front of other people. It wasn't self-control. It was fear. It was like deathly terrified. This was a few years later, 2018-ish. So fast forward a few years. I'm working as a full-time nanny and the mom makes rice and she puts a little butter and salt, and it was like onion salt or garlic salt, something like that. And she gives me a bite to eat. And I was just in that moment, I was like, oh no, I can't eat the rice. Like in my brain, I'm like freaking out because she's giving me this bite of rice. It was so intense. And I was never diagnosed with an eating disorder. And I don't know that I fit into one of your standard ones that you would learn about in high school, but it was so disordered with the thoughts and the drama and the fear that I had around food. And I ate that bite of rice. But then I thought, damn it, now I blew it. Even though I would go home and eat like low-carb protein bars or low-carb cookies or eat chocolate, it was this, or popcorn, it was still this idea of I wasn't supposed to eat that. I'm not supposed to, or I'm not allowed. So when I lived with housemates, so when my ex would deploy, during his first deployment, I moved up to Virginia. I was a live-in nanny. I worked as a personal assistant. So I had some other jobs and things going on. He deployed again. I found housemates for the following year. And there was a lot of secret eating. And I would eat in my room. And I would try not to buy boxes of like snack foods or protein bars. But I would end up stopping by the grocery store or Walgreens or something like that. And I would get just like a handful of bars because I wanted them. Or I would go to Whole Foods on my lunch break, or like I would go buy them at lunch. And I had the best of intentions to only eat one, but that rarely ever happened. Usually I was eating 2 or 3, plus popcorn, maybe jerky, some ice cream to round out the night. Like I was alternating between salty and sweet. And it was like, this is when things started to become a little bit more emotional. So this was 2016. So there was the physiological side, plus now some of the emotional side of things coming up of what am I doing with my life? I'm not in a job that I love and enjoy. I don't feel valued. I want to find something new, but I'm not getting interviews. And there was a lot of shame then about the food. So because of the shame I felt about my body, the shame I felt about a job or career or not having a business or trying to start a business and like failing, not succeeding, because I just wasn't in my lane. I was trying to do like marketing coaching and business coaching, and it just like that wasn't my lane. but I would end up like binging at night. And then I would hide the wrappers in like a Kroger bag or a Target bag, like a grocery bag. And then I would throw away the grocery bag. That way it could quote disguise the wrappers and the things that I was throwing away. And I still would try to hide it in the trash. I would still try to like make it so that you couldn't see how much I was actually eating. And it was just the same pattern. Then living with my ex when we were in Virginia, 2017 to 2019, this is when I was working as a nanny. This is when I really noticed, like I was overeating at lunch, snacking all throughout the day. And I really noticed, I was like, okay, I'm not hungry, yet I keep eating. I keep getting more food. What's going on? And it was the end of 2018, I want to say, or maybe even the end of 2017. I really started to look at, okay, what is going on here? What is my problem? What is happening? And I tried different courses, different programs, and then I just felt like it wasn't working. Like I just wasn't finding the right approach. Like I had one course and she basically just said, feel your feelings. And I was like, I am feeling my feelings, damn it. That's not the problem. And it wasn't that I had any overt feelings to feel. It was that I kept trying to stuff down all my negative, like honest, true thoughts about where I was in life and where I should be and what was going on in my marriage. Because even though I wasn't aware of all of the negativity and all of the things that we were, like the patterns and cycles we were in, we still had some struggles. And I just chalked it up to, well, we're still trying to readjust after him getting home from deployment. We're trying to adjust to a new like living situation. He's trying to adjust being out of the military. He's, you know, struggling with his own issues or his own personal things. I always had some kind of excuse or justification as to what was happening, but I was still eating over it. And for a while, it was like, okay, I just have to fix this thing. So in 2016, my coach at the time had mentioned emotional eating, but she didn't give me any tools to solve it. So I was like, okay. So it was basically just wait for your husband to get back from deployment and then things will be fine. And they weren't fine. I still remember crying in the kitchen after he got home because I wasn't comfortable in my body. I wasn't comfortable in my clothes, in my jeans. And he, like my ex, bless his heart, tried, but his approach was also, babe, you just got to eat less and exercise more. That's it. You just have to eat less. And I was like, I couldn't. I keep trying to eat less and I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to handle the cravings. I don't know how to handle the urges. I don't know how to handle the hunger. Like I can't keep doing this. Not after decades, like a full decade of trying to do that. It was so hard and so frustrating. When I was in DC, I've been working as a full-time nanny. It's not the job that I wanted, but it was the job that paid the bills. And I was like, I'm just going to trust God has me here for a reason, but I don't want to be here. But no other jobs were panning out. And I was the only one working while we were waiting for my ex to get his security clearance and start his job as a contractor and like do some things. And so it's okay. Like I have to work. I can't just quit my job. So I sucked it up, but then I thought, well, I just need a new job. So then I found a new job a year, like after being in that nanny position for a year, found a new job. And then for a couple of weeks, things were okay. But I noticed this same habit of overeating at lunch, snacking throughout the day, snacking into night, not really knowing what I wanted or wanting to eat dinner, and just falling back into the same pattern. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I just need a different job. And then it was, oh, I really want to have my own business. So I just need to be in my business full time. And then we moved. I was in the business full time. And I noticed, I like picked it up like in the afternoon. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to the pantry, but I'm not actually hungry. This is like late 2019. And I'm just like, oh, what is happening? Like I thought I'm in my business full time. I thought this was going to solve my problems. And just changing your circumstance doesn't change the habit. And so we can look at when it is, there are going to be times in life where we do want to change circumstances, when that is appropriate, when that is helpful, but looking at it or relying on changing a circumstance to change the binge eating habit, the emotional eating habit, it doesn't work that way. Because it's my thoughts about the circumstance. It's my emotions that are ultimately driving the behavior. And if I'm not addressing what's underneath, my real honest thoughts, my honest feelings, what I'm really struggling with, and because I was never addressing my own personal shame and discontentment with my body as a whole, with my body image, with food, I was never going to solve the problem. I kept trying to solve problems that were outside of me, problems that had not, like, I kept trying to solve the problem of food by just taking it away, by making it bad or off limits, or I shouldn't, trying to restrict. I never changed the way I thought about food. I never changed how I interacted with it. I never changed that relationship and that dynamic. It followed me no matter where I went. And it's so fascinating to see this connection between emotional eating and emotionally dysfunctional or emotionally abusive relationships. Because a lot of times what I've seen with clients and with people, and sometimes it's with clients' spouses or soon to be exes, like we can see this pattern playing out with them. Like I have one client right now and his soon to be ex has this pattern of going through. It's like same pattern over and over again. Different person, but same underlying factors. And she's still showing up as the same person. And she's still recreating the same pattern. It's like when you're dating and it's like you keep dating essentially the same person, different face, but same person, same patterns of behavior, same dynamic, because that's what, same thing here with food. I kept the same dysfunctional pattern and habit. So now no matter what food rules I tried to stick with, because at one point I tried to do intermittent fasting too, but I would just overeat during my eating window. So it didn't do anything for me. So I try to change my food rules. I still don't let go of everything, but now I'm fasting, trying to do low carb, low calorie, low fat, right? Like I don't give up any of the other ones. I'm just trying to not eat and starve myself through the morning. And I was really hesitant because for a long time, it was because I wanted to be low calorie. It was like, I need to eat later in the day so I can save my calories for later. And so I was really resistant to fasting because I was like, no, I can't go back there. Like I can't be trying to starve myself through the morning when I'm actually hungry and I need to eat. So there were a lot of ups and downs. There were a lot of things that came up, but it was like I never really changed the underlying relationship and dynamic with food, with my body and my body image, with myself, with where I thought I was or where I should be and how I was good enough or worthy or something. Like this whole concept of like unconditional self-love felt so foreign. And like there had to be consequences. There had to be punishment. And even now, unconditional self-love is still one of those things that like I continue to learn at deeper and deeper levels. But that was the pattern. It was like I never changed the underlying dynamic. So it was just the same thing over and over again. Which is just like what we do in relationships. If you don't change yourself and your internal dynamic and patterns and habits, if you don't have the self-awareness and the ability to sit in the pit of shame and despair of what you're really thinking and feeling and learning from it and choosing, consciously choosing, I am no longer going to beat myself up for this. I am no longer going to do this. Like we can't move through it. Because often that's what's happening is like we're trying to avoid the shame. So we turn to something else. And like that's why we people please. That's why we're trying to be perfectionists. That's why we're overeating and emotionally eating and emotionally drinking. It's why we're binging because we can't handle certain emotions. So we're trying to avoid them, but it only recreates more of them because in the binging, we just create more shame that we were trying to run from with the binge to begin with. This is the before. I think I'm going to stop here with this one. I think the next episode we'll do more of like the transition and what happened after. But this is the before. Because when I say diet hell, I don't know if people fully comprehend the misery that people like me lived in for so long, constantly thinking and obsessed with food and what they were eating and is it too much or is it enough and eating in secret and what are they eating in front of other people and then exercising and trying to over-exercise. And if they're trying to lose weight, then they have to not eat those bad foods because that, like those aren't weight loss foods. You've got to eat this over here. And it's just this constant cycle. And it's really hard to break, just like breaking out of an emotionally abusive relationship where you have a lot of trauma bonding, where you have cognitive dissonance. And sometimes things are really good. Sometimes she is really nice to you. Sometimes she does exactly what you want her to do. Sometimes he does buy you flowers, right? Like sometimes it is good. Sometimes it does seem to work, but you just get stuck in these loops over and over again. Just like with food and weight loss and dieting and binging. And this is what I help people break free of. We start by breaking free of this dynamic within yourself, within you, like internally within you, and really cleaning up your relationship with food, with body, with where you are in life and like your peace and contentment and just your own self-love. That is the first piece. From there, we start cleaning up other areas. So it might be things in your career, in your business, maybe work-life balance, things in your relationship. Some of my clients are happily married. Some of my clients are going through divorce. Some of my clients are dating. Some are in, they're all in various different areas, but it's, this becomes the core of this is what we focus on. And we start here. And from here, we now take these same concepts and we take the same approach and we start to apply it to make things better, to take what's good and make it even better, to identify the things that aren't working and to be really honest about what's not working in your life and being willing to take that hard look so that you can change it from a productive standpoint, not from a place of shame and judgment. And I have to get out of this quick. Because impatience, and this is something that comes up for me, is, oh, I've noticed even for myself with overspending has come from impatience and not wanting to be patient, not wanting to take my time, wanting to hurry up and get there. And I see it coming up. Even last month, my coach was pointing out, she was like, oh, yeah, so you were just feeling impatient. And I was like, oh, damn it, there's that impatience again. It's why I invested in some like a program and like this funnel program last year that I didn't need to be in, but it was like, I'm going to try to spend my way out of this problem. I'm not happy and satisfied and patient enough with where I'm at right now. I need to hurry up and get over here or over there. So it can come up with all different things, in all different ways, right? This was just a form of buffering. And so this is what we have to become aware of. We need to be so aware and in tune with our bodies, with our emotions, with the stories that we're telling ourselves. And this is what is going to create a life that's so good. It blows your mind when you are willing to feel all of the negative emotions, to feel all of the fear, the scarcity, the insecurity, the heartbreak, the shame, the guilt, and being willing to go through it, to move through it, to sit with it, to allow space for your own emotions, because that allows you to allow space for other people's emotions. And now you don't have to fix them, because you didn't create them and they can have their own experience. It's like it plays such a big role in how we show up in life in so many ways. If you would like some help with this to really end your binge eating habit, to end this dysfunctional relationship with food and body, then I would love to help you. This is what I am so good at because I have been in the pit. I was there for 12 years, really wrestling, really struggling with it for so long. And now being binge free the last 5 years has been wild. Like, I can't wait to talk to you about my after story. Like, what life looks like now is so radically different. It just gives me goosebumps. I'm so excited to share what this looks like because it is so good. It doesn't make sense. And it seems so counterintuitive. But this is where we start. So if you want some help, your next step is to schedule a free consultation. You can do that with the link in the show notes in the description here, or go to www.bodyyoucrave.com/schedule. And I'll help you see what's really standing in the way. Like, what's at the core, what's at the foundation of your emotional eating or binge eating habit, and how to work through it, how to break through it, because we don't need to just change the circumstances around us. We can start to change circumstances, but the first piece is to change internally and to recognize our own fears, insecurities, longings, wounds, desires, those core cravings, and how to meet them for yourself when they likely weren't met as a kid or at in past relationships or at different points in your life. All right. Gosh, this got really long. I knew this was going to take some time to get through, but I hope you all have a fabulous week. Here's to creating the life and body you crave.
If you like this episode, then you'll love my free virtual workshop, 5 Keys to End Emotional Eating and Lose Excess Weight for Life. You'll learn the counterintuitive reason why all your attempts to restrict food over the years has actually led to weight gain, and the mental switch you need to flick that'll have you dropping pounds without sacrificing wine, carbs, or the food you love. Get all the details at bodyyoucrave.com.